This is the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Don Cher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
I'm Christina Pugh, consulting editor.
And I'm Lindsay Garbutt, managing editor. This week we spoke with Jean Larson in Roanoke, Virginia, about her poem Reading an Elegy. Larson wrote the poem after visiting the Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge.
Since this poem is set at dawn, it does record actually a real experience where I was out on the wildlife refuge waiting for sunup so I could see these tundra swans there. And the light came up behind a forest or a string of trees that eventually I could see were loblolly pines because I could see the long needles in them. And then I saw that they were all dead because of salt wash from a storm. And so it was a series of repeated decodings which undercut one another and reminded me of how beautifully seductive language and all of its metaphors are, and how ultimately treacherous it can be to us if we cling too tightly to this is the one truth about the world.
Reading an Elegy draws on Larson's longstanding interest in ontology and epistemology.
Because I'm polluted by language, because I'm a reader, because I'm a word user, because I'm Homo sapiens, I said, oh, those are swans. And I made from that visual perception, and then later when they took off, the kind of clattering sound that their pinions, the strongest feathers on their wings, made against each other, I made from that a kind of solid thing.
But, Larson says, there's a long tradition of Eastern and Western philosophers who suggest we shouldn't think of things so rigidly.
What I think of as my human body or the bird's body is a kind of collusion, a kind of collection of complicated molecules, and molecules aren't little ping pong balls. Molecules are subatomic particles, whatever those are, sort of spinning around, and they might not even be particles, they might be waves. So I'm back in high school physics with light is either a particle or a wave or both. And all of that kind of fed into my understanding of what I was seeing.
Larson finds it thrilling to think that what we read is not the thing itself.
I'm less convinced that the things out there do indeed have some ultimate essential reality. At most, it's temporary. At most, those swans are going to fly away. At most, the ocean will wash over the pine trees and the salt water will kill them. Then we are off to sea level rising. So we have to keep all of that in mind as we do our readings.
Here's Jean Larson's poem, Reading an Elegy.
If I claim this poem presents the tundra swans we saw at first light, you might wrongly think of Yeats at Cooley, or 9 and 50 other suppositions. In fact, the blue slate of this lake reflected formerly some blockchain constellations. Alas, now, for mimesis, a star necklace makes an atlas, windless, spyglass, free pass, so you say. But come on, I swan, who ever took the mark for the squawk for the ding on sich? The weird ding is, the things themselves swanning about are also mere wavy carboxyl collusions, unestablishable is-is, noise marks hooing here, over here. Hush up your eyes. The swans in their ghost forest, where long needles inscribed loblolly pines, are vehement enough. Past the channel, early savanna shine, prisms on grass heads fog. Don't make a deal of it. Sundogs will yap soon. Pinions may clatter. Your head may stop throbbing. Hold fast. Stop hooing.
It's great the way this poem just gathers so much diction from various sources, so many words, you know, hooing, hush, don't make a deal of it, right? There's onomatopoeia, there's colloquial language, there's scientific language like carboxyl, And, of course, at first we get Yeats and that allusion to his Wild Swans. And I love the way this poem inductively is thinking through this notion that you can't see without seeing through language. You know, this poem is kind of doing what it wants us to think about, which is putting things into motion, realizing that things are in motion, that there's no static quality of anything in the world. And there's just so much energy in the way this poem does that.
Well, it's always nice, too, when, well, I mean, I'm always thrilled when a poem kind of reclaims something for poetry so that, like, most people probably don't want to write a lot about swans because of Yeats. And it's sort of hard to do that without looking over your shoulder. And I like the sort of deft evasion of the Yeats here by saying, basically, like, you're wrong. You're wrong. Think of it, which is true. I mean, it's literally true because one of the great things about the poem is like it's talking about tundra swans and loblolly pines, things that I think it's fair to say a great number of us probably don't really know much about or picture, you know, anywhere, let alone in a poem. So by having that diction that you were describing, it's almost like the poem is gritting its teeth, you know? It's really... You know, it's sort of struggling with the changes in this landscape and our relationship to it and, you know, the temptation to look for abstractions and images when the reality is corrosive and vehement. I love that word here, vehement, because there's sort of a – it's like the trajectory is our human way of living on this planet has a vehemence to it. But then that is, we see now increasingly, at least we're increasingly aware of the fact that what nature is doing is countering that with its own vehemence. Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty sight. I mean, literally, it's not a pretty sight. But, you know, the poem is really struggling with it. And it reclaims another thing, too, which is elegy, because you think of elegies as being sort of gentle reimaginings of something that's, or someone departed. And this is not, it's not a gentle poem at all. It's an elegy for so many things. And frankly, even the title reading, that's very eerie too, because we're sitting around reading all this stuff while these things are happening. And it's almost like reading is beside the point in a certain sense.
Yeah, it's definitely not a gentle poem, but it is playful in a way. The reference to the ding and sitch and then the weird ding is, I mean, that's funny. And then, you know, there's that change from the noise marks hooing over here, and at the end, it says stop hooing, but this time it's W-H-O instead of H-O-O. And so that's sort of a commentary on we need to stop anthropomorphizing or being so anthropocentric about the world and who it exists for and why, you know, why it's here. But at the same time, how can you write a poem without perception, without being a human being writing the poem, you know? And so I think that that's where that playfulness comes in, because there's an awareness that, like, well, I still want to do this thing. I still want to write this poem. I know all these things logically in my head, but emotionally, I still want to do this. Or, you know, I'm trying to do both things at once. And I think that's where, even if it's not gentle, it's still an enjoyable reading experience in its sadness, in its rationality, and in its acknowledgement of trying to bring a larger perspective to a poem about swans.
Yeah. And I think what's also interesting about this poem and its insistence on movement, it's counterbalanced by its commitment to a kind of discrete form on the page. It's in tercets, three-line stanzas, except at its ending, which has a couplet, which is a kind of sense of a missing line, or sort of a missing line in movement, perhaps. But what's fascinating is that it resists the impulse to make its flux and its commitment to flux in nature mimetically imposed on the page. So in other words, if you can imagine this poem as dispersing itself across a page, that might be one way of approaching it. However, this poem chooses not to do that and to stick with the left margin, the tercets, and make itself a discrete artifact in a kind of counterbalance to the fluxion that it's celebrating and lamenting and wondering about.
Jean Larson's third book of poems is What Penelope Chooses. She's also published 4 novels and 2 books of translations of poems by medieval Chinese women.
You can read Reading an Elegy in the November 2019 issue of Poetry Magazine or online at poetrymagazine.org.
We'll have another episode for you next week, or you can get all November episodes all at once in the full-length podcast on SoundCloud.
Let us know what you thought of this program. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or if you listen another way, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Are you thinking of buying someone a book for the holidays? Have you considered giving them one book every month for an entire year? We've got you covered. For a limited time, buy one subscription to Poetry Magazine and gift one free. That's 2 subscriptions for the price of one. Give the gift of poetry today. Go to poetrymagazine.org/podcastholiday. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcastholiday.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Rachel James.
The theme music comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbutt.
I'm Christina Pugh.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.